Hey, I'm Steph.
I'm Alex.
And this is Not Today.
And we're live.
Hello.
How are you?
Fantastic. How are you?
I'm great.
Good.
You know, I guess I'm not fantastic, you know?
Yeah.
But I feel at peace. I've gone for a little elliptical session.
That's good.
I'm ready for a story to be told to me.
Today.
From you today.
Yeah, it's good to get some steam off after a long week. But yeah, I'm excited to tell you the story. It's going to be a bit crazy. I was trying to think of a different word, but then I was like, why?
But why?
If it ain't broke, don't fix it,
right?
You know? But before we jump in, I did want to let you guys know that bonus episode number 25 is live on Patreon, and it was a good story. Would you agree?
Yes. I mean, this is, it feels so much like they should have been able to get out of the situation they were in, right?
Yeah.
Because I'm sure that, I don't know, you got to go listen to it, but it is one of those things where they just were in the exact wrong spot. And I cannot believe they survived.
At the worst time.
At the worst time. And the amount that they endured and physically survived through is honestly astonishing.
It's true.
And episode 25 is 2 years of doing Patreon.
That's true.
We've been talking about wild stories for a long time. This is...
There are so many bonus episodes over there.
Right. But this is honestly, I don't know, one of the most shocking to me.
I agree.
They survived.
Yeah, it was like one terrible thing happening after another. And it got to the point where you're like, how many more bad things could possibly happen? And they just kept happening. But
yeah, I mean, you're like, are they still alive halfway through the story?
Right.
You know?
Right. You're like, they couldn't possibly have lived through this.
Right.
But they did. Just to give a little bit of a description on what that story is, because, you know, why not tease it a little bit more? The description I wrote is, in 2004, while on a climbing trip in New Zealand, students Sonia Rendell and Marnie Shepherd became stuck on a ledge after what started as a steep slope quickly became a sheer cliff. When Sonia almost fell to her death, the two decided they needed to spend the night where they were, not realizing a massive storm was headed their way. And
yep.
That's the truth. But anyway, that's
I thought you were about to say, and that's the tea.
And that is the tea. That story is up on Patreon. Go over to patreon.com/nottodaypodcast and you get a bunch of really cool stuff. So anyway, that's enough shameless self-plugs. Why don't we jump into this week's story, because it is a long one. I have like 20 pages of notes that are like size 11 font, single spaced. So we have a lot of information to get through. So why don't we get started?
All right.
David Alexander Krupa, or Dave, was born on October 9th, 1976, to parents Tom and Trish. He lived in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, with his parents and two younger brothers, Adam and Max. His dad worked at a printing company, and his mom worked as a veteran service officer. Dave's family was very loving, and he said it was a perfect household, very typical family. The Krupa boys grew up in a typical suburban home with lots of friends and neighbors. After high school, Dave moved to Denver and spent 2 years with the National Guard. He earned his associate's degree in automotive engineering before moving back to Sioux Falls, and then eventually he landed in Council Bluffs, Iowa, where he began working at a truck stop. He quickly fell for one of his coworkers, a woman named Amy Flora, and the two ended up dating for 12 years, and during that time had two kids together. Amy wanted to get married to Dave, but he wasn't so keen on the idea of marriage, and this would eventually break the two up in 2011. The split was a bit tense for that reason, but they always remained civil since they would be co-parenting their kids. In 2012, Dave moved to Omaha, Nebraska, which is the city right next to Council Bluff. He enjoyed his apartment, his job, and spending time with his kids. He started working at an auto body shop, so now he's a mechanic, I believe. But he felt like it was time to put himself back out there. So he decided to make a profile on the dating website Plenty of Fish, which was when he met a woman named Liz Golier. The two agreed to grab coffee in Omaha. At the time, Dave was 35, and Liz was 38 and had a housekeeping business. And like Dave, she also had two kids. On their first date, Dave told Liz that he had just gotten out of a long-term relationship, so he wasn't looking for anything too serious. Liz said that was fine with her. She was busy with her kids and her housekeeping, so she didn't really have time for a relationship either.
Okay, what's the problem?
So, with that out of the way, the two started seeing each other regularly over the next few weeks. And Dave started to feel like Liz was really into him. He thought she was attractive and fun to be around, which he enjoyed, but after those few weeks, Dave slowly started losing interest. He didn't think Liz was very smart or well-read, and he was looking to spend time with someone a bit more intellectual, and also he was spending a lot of time with her and he didn't really want a relationship, so...
Yeah, I was just about to comment on that. It's so funny. Well, I don't really, like, I don't want anything too serious. Let's just spend 3 days a week for the next month together.
I think the main motivator was sex, you know? Well, it was just kind of like, let's get together and potentially... Let's
do that.
Get freaky with it. You know? But yeah, so Liz ended up being a bit too clingy for Dave and also a bit nosy. She wanted to spend time with him way more than he was comfortable with.
And just a bit dumb.
Well, you know... He wanted to keep his options open, and since he had made it clear that he wasn't looking for a relationship and the two weren't exclusive, Dave went back on Plenty of Fish. From there, he started going on more dates and hooking up with other women. After his relationship with Amy, he just wasn't ready to commit to any person. And Dave had made it clear to Liz that they were keeping things casual, meaning he couldn't give her all his time and he was going to see other women. And Liz agreed to keep seeing Dave under those conditions. So now they've had this conversation twice. He's like, I want to keep things casual. And both times, Liz is like, totally fine.
But it's not totally fine.
Well, we'll see. So at first, everything was fine. But that changed when Liz started showing up at Dave's apartment before some of his dates. She told Dave that she had deleted her Plenty of Fish profile right after they met because she only wanted to see him, which isn't very casual, Liz, you know?
I mean, you can't change him.
No, yeah.
You know, he's been pretty clear about what he is doing.
Very true. But I guess she was of the opinion that if she was persistent enough and persuasive enough, he would just change his mind.
Well.
Yeah. So after she told him that she had deleted her Plenty of Fish profile because she only wanted to see him, Dave stayed firm with what he wanted. He told her it would be a waste of her time to wait around for him to want to be in a relationship because it was likely never going to happen, at least with her. So Dave decided if she wanted to keep sleeping with him anyway, that was her decision, which is maybe on Dave. I think maybe that one's on Dave.
I feel like this is a very guy thing to do.
He's been very clear this whole time. He's looking for hookups. And if she wants to continue to hook up with him, then, you know, he wasn't about to be like, no, I won't have sex with you, you know?
Yeah, fair enough.
So, I mean, it's not the best thing to do, especially for someone who's like clearly wanting more. He maybe should have cut things off there, but, you know, that isn't what happened. Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples. Spring has sprung and don't I know it. My congestion and runny nose have been driving me crazy, but Astapro has helped alleviate my symptoms so much. Astapro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It is the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes while other allergy sprays take hours. Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astapro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing. I've used Astapro a few times now, and every time I do, my nasal allergies are gone so quickly. Breathing clearly feels so good, and thanks to Astapro, I get to keep doing it. Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astapro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can Astapro and go today. Astepro allergy.com. Astapro and go. Use as directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies. So with that being said, the two of them saw each other on and off for a while. On one hand, Liz knew how to have a good time and could be a lot of fun, but on the other hand, she was jealous and clingy and could be pretty passive-aggressive. Whenever Dave would come back from hanging out with his kids in Council Bluff, Liz would make snarky comments about how he was only going there to see his ex, Amy. And that really pissed Dave off because he and Amy weren't really on good terms, and he truly was going there just to be with his kids. So it really just rubbed him the wrong way. He's like, stop saying that. It's not true, and it's pissing me off, quite frankly.
Yeah, like he can't just spend time with his kids.
Exactly. It's like he couldn't spend time doing anything without Liz being like, well, are you thinking about me?
Also, here's the other point. Even if I was... This is the terms of what you fucking signed up for.
Exactly. Yeah, he and Amy didn't even really speak unless they were talking about picking up and dropping off their kids. So
that's not good.
Yeah, I mean, they weren't. Sucks. They were just co-parenting at this point, you know? So at some point, Dave had had enough of Liz's behavior and he decided to break things off with her. But even then, Liz always knew how to get herself back into his life. Every few weeks, she would be back, and they would fight, and then Dave would end it. Over and over, Liz ignored Dave when he told her he didn't want to commit to her. She started getting a little bit delusional about his feelings for her. In an email to Dave, she kept insisting that he wasn't being honest with his feelings for her. She would try to persuade him or guilt him into an exclusive relationship. And surprisingly enough... those emails kind of worked in Liz's favor. Yeah, because Dave agreed to be exclusive with Liz for 1 month. He gave her a test run.
Wow, okay. Well, that's surprising to me.
It was surprising to me too. But he learned in that month that this situation with Liz wasn't really what he wanted. He had been right the first few times. Around that time, Dave had been working at the auto body shop when he met a woman named Carrie Farver. When she brought her Ford Explorer in for a repair. And as they were going over what needed to be done on her car, the two of them got closer and closer as they looked under the hood of her car. And they started feeling that tension and instant connection with each other. Dave thought Carrie was beautiful, but he was at work, and he didn't want to ask out a client while he was on the job. But as luck would have it, Dave found Carrie on Plenty of Fish, and the two started chatting. And 2 weeks later, Carrie brought her car back into the shop, and it just so happened to be the end of Dave's 1 month exclusive period with Liz. And at that point, they exchanged numbers. So let's talk about Carrie. Carrie Leah Farver was born on November 30th, 1974, to Nancy Bisbee and Dennis Farver. She grew up with an older brother named Adam and a younger half-brother named John, and the family lived in Macedonia, Iowa. Her parents divorced when she was 18 months old, but they remained on good terms throughout her life, and she was very close with both of them. Nancy remarried her high school sweetheart, Mark, when Carrie was just 6 years old, and Carrie loved Mark, and she loved having two dads. So, very healthy family. Carrie lived in Macedonia her whole life. It was a very small, rural town with a population of 250 people.
Wow.
And I looked it up, because this story takes place in, like, the mid-2000s, but, like... in 2021, the population was like 267 or something like that. Like, it's still 250 people.
It grew.
Yeah, I guess by
It actually 17. Grew by, you know, 5% or whatever.
Yeah, I guess. So, point being, everyone knew each other there. Very small town. I mean, sure. Smaller than my graduating class in high school. Like,
right, yeah, me right. too.
So Carrie's family had been there for generations. Not only was Carrie a kind person, but she was extremely smart. And as a child, her teachers recognized that she belonged in the school's gifted program. So she was like extra smart. She and her mother loved the theater. They both enjoyed acting and singing, and Carrie grew up doing community theater. She was also beautiful and had a number of boyfriends throughout her life. After she graduated high school, she attended University of Kansas and began dating a guy named Frank. Carrie and Frank were almost at the point of breaking up when she discovered that she was pregnant. They tried their best to keep their relationship going, but it didn't work out, so Carrie moved back to her parents' house to continue doing her classes online and have the baby. December 10th, 1997, Carrie gave birth to her son, Maxwell. Even though Carrie was a single mom who was busy with school, she was an amazing mother. Not too long after Max's birth, Carrie's mother started recognizing that her daughter had begun acting a little bit differently. She had begun having severe anxiety attacks. She would go through periods of depression where she wouldn't get out of bed and didn't want to see anyone. And eventually, Carrie was diagnosed with bipolar disorder. When she was put on medication, things seemed to be turning around for her, and she went back to her usual upbeat self. Nancy, Carrie's mother, didn't necessarily agree with her diagnosis of bipolar disorder, but the medication seemed to be helping, which was an improvement. Throughout the rest of her 20s, she bounced around a few different jobs, she lived in Topeka, Kansas, and was married and divorced twice. But eventually, she moved back to Macedonia and got a job that she really loved as a computer programmer at West Corporation in Omaha, Nebraska. She had been working on a big project at work when she met Dave Krupa.
So she's a coder.
She is a coder.
Damn. That's quite a story, though. I mean, she's divorced twice, single mother in college, finished her school online, and is from a town of less than 300 people. It's kind of cool.
Yeah.
And she works for the very descriptive corporation West.
West Corporation, yep. In Omaha, Nebraska.
Sure.
But yeah, she's a computer programmer, so.
Is she living in Omaha or Macedonia and just commuting?
She was living in Macedonia and commuting.
Okay, I was going to say, if she got a programming job in Macedonia, what is she doing?
Yeah, no, she was still like living near her family, and the commute, I think, was about an hour to Omaha.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah. Okay. It was just over the Missouri River, I believe.
A river.
A whole river cut between the two states. But yeah, it was very pretty much on the border of both.
Okay.
So now we're back where we left off. She and Dave have met and they exchanged numbers. And afterwards, they planned to meet at Applebee's in Omaha for their first date. On their date, the two hit things off right away. Dave thought Carrie was smart, she had a good job, she was beautiful, and they made each other laugh constantly. But their date was unfortunately interrupted when Liz started blowing up Dave's phone. Dave tried to ignore it, but she was demanding to come over to his apartment to grab some of her stuff that she had left behind. And Dave finally answered her and told her that he was on a date and she would have to wait.
That was the wrong move.
Potentially. But that didn't interrupt Dave and Carrie's fun too much, because after they left Applebee's, Dave invited Carrie to his place and she agreed. They spent time talking and getting to know each other better, but once again, the two were interrupted when Dave's door buzzer started going off over and over. He went to the door to see who it was, and of course, it was Liz. But this time, she was crying and demanded that Dave let her in. So he went back inside and told Carrie that his ex was crying at the front door, so he would just be a minute to deal with that. Carrie was super chill about the whole situation and told Dave that he could sort that out and then just call her after. So she's like, I'm gonna head out. And then
it's time to go.
Yeah, you figure that one out and then let me know. So Dave walked Carrie out of the building, which was when Carrie and Liz saw each other for the first time. They literally walked right by each other.
Ooh.
Neither of them said a word before Carrie got into her car and she drove away.
Okay. I mean, do you even acknowledge the other person?
Like, no. You don't have to. Give him
a little wave.
I don't think you got to give him a little wave. I think it's just one of those things where you just look at the ground and you walk past, you know? So after Liz left, Dave immediately called back Carrie. And it was still early enough, and her grandparents were already watching Max for the night, so she invited Dave over to her house in Macedonia. While the two hung out, it was obvious that they were both very into each other. But Carrie told Dave she wanted to be clear about her expectations. She wasn't looking for anything serious. She just wanted something fun and casual. And Dave was thrilled because they were both looking for the exact same thing. She's beautiful. She's funny. She's got a good job. Like, and she just wants to fuck. No, no, I'm sorry. That's
kind of what's happening.
I'm not going to say that. No, respectfully, she wanted to keep seeing how things progressed, respectfully, of course. So Dave spent the night, and over the next 2 weeks, the two saw each other pretty frequently. Carrie's commute to work was pretty long from Macedonia, but her office was just down the street from Dave's place in Omaha. And like I said earlier, she was working on a big project, so Dave offered for her to spend a few nights at his place, that way she could cut down her commute time in the morning, because he lived literally down the street, she could walk to work from his apartment.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah.
And so that was a huge help to her, so she asked her mother to keep Max for those few days, that way she could stay at Dave's and she wouldn't have to drive an hour both ways every morning and night, yeah, you know?
Because that sucks.
Yeah, she was like, I have a lot going on at work, so this is just easier for me. The two of them got along really well, and both were having a good time. But meanwhile, Liz kept trying to contact Dave because she wasn't over him and she knew that he was seeing this new girl and she didn't like that. She sent him email after email rambling about anything she could to keep his attention, but Dave just ignored most of them. On the night of November 10th, 2012, someone vandalized Carrie's Ford Explorer by keying it and spraying silver paint all over it. So Carrie recorded a video of it and posted it on her Facebook. She said in the video, "So on Wednesday night, someone here in the whopping metropolis of Macedonia, Iowa, decided Mac's Explorer was not the right color. Somebody thought they were quite the artist." Almost kind of insinuating that she may have known who had done it, because there were 250 people in Macedonia and she knew every single one of them. So she's like, I think I have a sneaking suspicion. It was definitely an annoying situation, but for the most part, she just kind of brushed it off. Two nights later, on November 12th, 2012, Carrie spent the night at Dave's place once again, since she needed to be at work pretty early the next day. It was a normal night for the two of them, and the next morning, Dave woke up early and got ready for work. Before heading out, he saw Carrie on the couch in her PJs working on her coding project. She had to be at work at 6:30 a.m., and her office was just a quick walk from his place, like I said. At 6:15, Carrie called her supervisor and gave her an update on the project she was working on, and at 6:25, Dave left for work, and on his way out, he kissed Carrie goodbye and told her he'd see her tonight. But when 6:30 a.m. rolled around, Carrie never showed up for work. At 6:42, her computer logged off of Facebook, and at 9:54, her cell phone logged back into Facebook. At that point, her account removed Dave Krupa from her friends list. And at around the same time, Carrie responded to her own post about the car vandalism incident and left a comment underneath it saying that it turned out to just be some kids. 20 minutes later, Dave got some strange texts from Carrie saying that she wanted to move in with him. And Dave, who just left for work having a normal conversation with Carrie, felt like this was completely out of nowhere. He really felt like they had been on the same page about what their relationship was, so he immediately said, "I'm not looking for that. I thought we were on the same page about this." A few seconds later, he got a text back that said, "Fine, I hate you. I'm dating someone else. I don't want to see you anymore. Go away." And Dave thought that was extremely weird and like out of character for Carrie, but at the same time, he was like, "I've only known her for 2 weeks, and it's possible that I just dodged a bullet." As time went on, Carrie's boss was starting to get really confused because she needed to be there to finish that project. And as hours went by and there was still no sign of her, her boss called Carrie's cell phone a few times, but she was sent straight to voicemail. When Dave got home from work that day, he found all of Carrie's things were gone. The whole situation was very weird, but he shrugged it off and told himself that they just weren't right for each other.
This is so abrupt.
It's very weird. He thought it was weird. He's like, this is so unlike her and out of nowhere, but at the same time, he had known her for 2 weeks.
Oh, this is only 2 weeks old?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they spent a lot of time together in those 2 weeks. So for him, he was like, I feel like I had a pretty good grasp on like who she probably was, but it was 2 weeks.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe it's not that wild to like know. Yeah, no, it's not.
What?
To like know somebody for 2 weeks and like you're like regularly letting them spend the night.
It wasn't that strange because the two of them were both very clear about what they were looking for. And it was truly just like a logistical thing that Carrie's work was so close to Dave. And he was like, okay, well, I want you to sleep over anyway and you can go to work in the morning. So, yeah. You know, it just kind of worked out for both of them. But then this happened and he's like, oh, actually, I don't think I knew her as well as I thought I did.
Right.
Carrie's mom, Nancy, really started getting worried, though, because she had received a text from her daughter saying that she was getting a new job in Kansas. But that didn't make any sense to her mother because she knew Carrie loved her job. So she asked Max, who had been staying with her at the time, and he told her that his mom had maybe mentioned a job in Kansas, so it wasn't so out of the blue. Nancy called her daughter over and over again, but got no response. But afterwards, she did get some weird text messages from her daughter. Carrie told her mother that she was thinking about checking herself into a mental hospital. She also mentioned that she had broken up with her boyfriend, and she said she was going to move to Kansas with Max. Nancy was incredibly confused, but she knew that Carrie's half-brother John would be getting married that weekend, and Carrie wouldn't possibly miss that wedding. So she's like, okay, been like a day. She's been texting me really weird things. I can't get a hold of her, but I'll see her in a few days, so it'll be fine. But a few days passed, and Nancy texted Carrie about when she was going to pick up Max for the wedding, and Carrie never answered, nor did she show up for this very important family wedding. That was a huge red flag, because not only was it her brother's wedding, but also her father, Dennis, was battling stomach cancer, and he didn't have a lot of time left, so it was super important to the whole family that everyone be at John's wedding for Dennis. And she was really close with her father, so they were like, what is going on?
Right.
So that Friday, Nancy reported her daughter missing, because she's like, something is clearly wrong. But the police didn't give that report much attention. Carrie was an adult, and she had been in contact with Nancy. Even though she hadn't spoken on the phone with her, she was texting her mother. The police didn't feel like this was a very big emergency or a very urgent missing persons case because she was in contact with her daughter. But Nancy knew that this wasn't like Carrie, and she felt like something was seriously wrong. Not only were those messages completely out of left field, but Nancy also knew that Carrie's son Max was the most important thing to her, and she would never just up and abandon him. Meanwhile, Dave was starting to get pretty weirded out because he had begun getting a lot of really weird texts from Carrie. They were all really angry, and they didn't make a ton of sense, and they had a bunch of spelling and grammar mistakes, and one of them even said she hated Dave and wanted to drive a knife through his heart. And some of the texts were about Liz. Some of them called her a fat, ugly whore who wasn't good enough for Dave. And Liz told Dave that she had started getting these nasty texts from Carrie. Her texts had been telling her to back off of Dave, and if she didn't, Carrie would hurt her and her kids. Not long after that, Liz called the police and told them that someone had broken into her garage. The burglar had stolen one of her old invalid checkbooks and also spray-painted the phrase, whore, from Dave, on the wall.
What is going on?
Right. So someone spray-painted whore from Dave.
Someone.
Yes.
Spray-painted whore from Dave. Okay.
On Liz's garage wall.
This is perhaps one of two people.
Well, yeah, Liz is saying, Carrie has been sending me a lot of really crazy texts, and she broke into my house and did this.
I would like to have Liz call Carrie's phone.
Okay, why don't you just keep listening to the story? How about that? On the night of November 17th, Carrie's mother, Nancy, got a text from Carrie. It was a photo of one of Liz's old checks, written out for $5,000 to Carrie Farver. And the signature was Liz's real name, which was Shanna Golier. Her middle name was Elizabeth, so she went by Liz. But point being, she wrote out a check for $5,000 for Carrie.
Okay.
The text said that Carrie had sold her bedroom set, and she needed to let the buyer into the house to get it. And Nancy could not believe that. It was just another thing because her bedroom set was passed down through her family, so she knew her daughter never would have sold it. It was just so many things where she's like, my daughter wouldn't do these things. She was sure her daughter was not the person who was sending her those texts. So her mother was either like, okay, either my daughter has had a complete mental break and she's like off of her medication and she's truly going through some kind of mental crisis, or this simply is not Carrie.
Yeah, I mean, it's so bizarre, it's hard to believe.
Yes. So Nancy responded, I need to hear your voice first, and then I'll really know it's you. What she got back was a bunch of really nasty texts calling Nancy a controlling and bad mother. And at first, Nancy was really hurt by that. But again, she realized that her daughter wouldn't have said those things. And she also started to notice the texts always had bad grammar and spelling, which was very unlike Carrie. Carrie was a computer programmer. She was smart and a stickler for grammar. So Nancy knew for sure something was very off. She brings the texts to the police and told them that they definitely couldn't have come from Carrie. The police weren't exactly convinced by a few misspelled words. So over the next few days, Nancy received more texts telling her that Carrie was going to move to Kansas and was taking Max with her. And Max had become afraid of what was going on, and in her daughter's absence, Nancy became Max's legal guardian. It hurt Nancy to file for legal guardianship, but she kind of felt like she had no other choice. At the same time, they tried to keep Carrie's disappearance from her father, Dennis. But after a while, he started to notice that she hadn't come to see him. And eventually they had to break the news to him. And they tried to do it as gentle as possible because he was very sick and weak, but he was still devastated by this news. And on December 7th, tragically, Dennis died from his stomach cancer, and the family got no word from Carrie. Max turned 15 3 days later, and still they never heard from her. Dennis's funeral was held on the 12th, and again, Carrie's family waited for her to show up, but she never did. The weirdest part was her Facebook account had posted an apology for missing the funeral. It was all so out of character. One night after Dennis's passing, though, Nancy had a dream with Dennis in it, and he told her, "Nancy, she's with me." And it was after that dream that Nancy felt like Carrie may have passed away. Nancy desperately wanted that dream to be fake, and she hoped her daughter was somewhere alive, even if she was just in a bad mental space. But at the same time, if it were true, it gave her some kind of peace knowing Carrie was safe with her loved ones in heaven.
So Nancy, I got goosebumps. This is spooky.
Yeah, it is pretty spooky. So Nancy continued working with the police and at one point told them that her daughter had been diagnosed with bipolar disorder. And that changed things because now they believed that Carrie was having a manic episode. So no matter how convincing Nancy had been about how weird the texts were and how out of character everything was, they now had an explanation. They believed that she was just having a breakdown and she took off. But Nancy didn't believe that, and as I mentioned earlier, she never really believed her daughter's bipolar diagnosis was correct in the first place. Sure, her daughter had some struggles, but she never had any kind of manic episodes before. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. What's the first thing you would do if you had an extra hour in your day? Take a walk? Read a book? Show up for friends? A lot of us spend so much of our lives wishing we had more time. But the question is, time for what? If time was unlimited, how would you use it? The best way to squeeze that special thing into your schedule is to know what's important to you and make it a priority. And therapy can help you find what matters to you most so you can do more of it. The people in my life are the most important thing to me, and therapy has definitely helped me navigate those relationships. I've learned how to effectively communicate with the people in my life, I've come a long way with my anxiety, and I've developed great coping skills. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. No need for any awkward therapist breakups. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/nottoday to get 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp, HELP.com/nottoday. Something that really concerned Nancy was when she went to Carrie's house and saw that her winter coat was sitting on her kitchen chair. It was the winter time, and she had no idea where her daughter was, and she didn't even have her coat with her, which was just another odd piece to the puzzle. This case was so strange because in Macedonia, Iowa, Carrie was being looked into as a missing person. But just 5 miles away across the Missouri River in Nebraska, she was being investigated as a stalker. About a week after Carrie was last seen, she sent a text to her boss at West Corporation that she would be quitting her job and moving to Kansas. And also keep in mind that while all of this is going on, she is actively harassing Dave and Liz. And they're getting like hundreds of texts a day and threatening messages, and like it's really bad. So the Iowa police, who had been looking into Carrie as a missing person, tracked down Liz because of the photo of the check that Carrie had sent her mom, which was from Liz's checkbook. But Liz told them that she was pretty sure Carrie had stolen her checks, and on top of that, she had been stalking her and Dave. Investigators found out that some of Carrie's texts had been sent from Liz's neighborhood, which confirmed that she very well may have been stalking Liz, because if she was in the neighborhood, then she, you know, was not doing anything good. And right. They searched for her there, but there was no sign of Carrie or her Ford Explorer. When the police checked in with Dave, he told them that he had been getting hundreds of troubling texts from Carrie a day. Alex is raising his hand. Yes.
What year is this happening in?
2013.
Okay, so we fully have the technology to track this phone.
They said that some of the texts were coming from Liz's neighborhood, which is why they thought that Carrie was stalking her.
why are they not tracking the phone everywhere? I guess how hard are they going after her for stalking, but also as a missing person? Like, how easy is this to just ping the phone and go there?
I don't know that they necessarily are able to get that amount of information without, like, warrants and stuff. I don't know exactly.
Yeah, at what point does the stalking become to the level where you can get a warrant?
When there's, like, a direct threat to your life, but, like, in a physical way, not just, like, I'm going to threaten you over a message. It's like, I'm showing up at your house, I've broken in, and I have a knife. And then you call the police, and then they come, and they're like, okay, now we can do something. Like, that's the notorious thing about stalker cases is, like, famously, the police don't do anything until there's, like, actually a physical threat to you. Which is why a lot of the times cases like this are so frustrating, because there are direct threats. Like, even though they're over text or call or email or whatever, these threats are very real. And so many times I've heard the story of, like, oh, well, we can't do anything until they're physically here. And it's like, well, then I'll just be killed. Like,
yeah,
then, like, you know, it's a tough situation. So I don't know that they necessarily had permission to get as much information as they wanted to or could, fair. You know?
It's just tough.
Yeah. But yeah,
probably for the best, but
yeah,
certainly infuriating in this case.
Yes, definitely infuriating. But they did have certain signs that Carrie was stalking them. But investigators told Carrie, I believe they had gotten in contact with her, like, over text, that her case wouldn't be closed until they spoke with her in person. Because I think Carrie had texted them, like, stop getting into my business or something. Like, I think it was, like, something like that. And they were like, we're not going to stop until we physically speak to you. And Carrie texted back and told them to leave her alone. And she told them that she wanted one person to go away for destroying everything for her. So that's when the police were convinced that Carrie hadn't run away. She was just a jealous ex turned stalker who had gone crazy, which was something they had heard a million times before. So they're like, okay, we know this song and dance. It's going to be fine. As weeks passed, Dave became really sick of the constant harassment. He was getting over 60 text messages and 100 emails and countless calls a day from Carrie. And a few times he had gotten so many messages, his phone stopped working.
Damn. Can you block a number in 2013?
Yeah. So he did that. He tried everything. He changed his number. He blocked numbers. He changed his email addresses. But somehow Carrie always found his new information.
Damn.
And most of the messages that he was getting were unhinged. They were full of threats, or she would curse at him. And at the same time, others would, like, profess her love for him. So it was very back and forth. It was very like, I want you dead, but also I want you to be my husband. Like, very strange.
Very intense swings.
Yes, very intense.
Well, I mean, is that not a feature of bipolar?
Unsure. Some of the messages Liz got threatened to kill her and her kids if she didn't leave Dave alone. And Dave would get messages from Carrie that said she hoped Liz killed herself so they could finally be together. Through all the crazy messages and stalking, Dave and Liz were kind of brought together once again. Because now they had a common enemy. They bonded over how insane all of this was. And Dave also felt pretty guilty about the fact that he had dragged Liz into all of this craziness. But Liz was surprisingly understanding of the whole situation, and she put up with all the threatening messages that she was receiving. And Dave was grateful for that. At least he had someone to lean on who understood what he was going through.
I really keep oscillating between what's happening. I don't know, man.
You can say your theory if you'd like.
I really think it's Liz. I mean, this is too convenient, no?
It's, like, very weird.
I don't know. It just seems so crazy that after 2 weeks and a complete stable life that you would have this much of a sustained mental break and you're not calling anyone and you're not seeing anyone in person. That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, but mental illness, Carrie, can be pretty severe.
Sure, but I don't know about this severe. She's never had this problem in her entire life. She's going to have it at, what, how old is she?
Like 35 or something.
It's going to manifest now? I don't know. That just seems unlikely.
Well, why don't we just keep going? So Dave was grateful for Liz at this point, but at the same time, he felt extremely exhausted. He was scared and worn down. And sometimes when Dave and Liz were hanging out, they would even get texts from Carrie at the exact same time. They'd be watching television on the couch and both of their phones would blow up with message after message after message. And while that was happening, they started making light of the situation and they joked that it was just crazy Carrie again.
Okay, that's an interesting development.
A new piece of information has been unlocked. Okay, but as many times as they were able to laugh about it, Dave was also extremely freaked out, especially when he would get a text from Carrie saying that she was watching him. He would be sitting at home in his living room when he would get a text from Carrie that said, "I see you in the chair with your feet propped up. You're wearing a blue t-shirt." Or, "My favorite thing to do is stand outside your window and stare at you." So he knew that someone was watching him, and when he got these kinds of texts, he would run outside looking for Carrie, but he would never find her. And at the end of December, Carrie sent Dave a text that she was pregnant, and she sent Liz a message telling her to back off of Dave for the sake of the baby. But Dave knew he hadn't gotten her pregnant. He had gotten a vasectomy a while back, and Carrie actually had a hysterectomy, although he didn't know that at the time. So, no possible baby. Liz begged for Carrie to leave her alone. She even told Carrie that she would stop seeing Dave if she would lay off, but she never stopped. Months went by of constant harassment. And during this time, Amy even started getting some of it. Dave's ex of 12 years and mother of his two kids. She started getting scary texts from Carrie warning her to stay away from Dave, and the whole thing was just becoming too much. She couldn't understand why she was a part of any of this. She didn't even talk to Dave. So Nancy logged into her Facebook and saw that she had received a message from a new profile, one that was using her daughter's name and photo. Nancy responded and told whoever it was that the only way they'd believe this was Carrie was if they called her and she heard her daughter's voice. The account answered back, "Fine, I will call you, but I am done after that. You have Max and I am grateful, but after all the cop stuff from before, I am done. I am not 10 years old, Mom. I can leave him and move on with someone new. Everything is about phone call. I was just heading to bed. Who else would know about Dad? Fine, I will call you sometime. I just wanted you to know I was okay." Also, there are multiple spelling and grammar issues within those messages. So Nancy felt like this wasn't Carrie. Then her Facebook updated, and there was a status made that said David Krupa had just proposed to Carrie. There was also a picture of a hand with a ring on it. And seeing that, Nancy thought that that couldn't be Carrie's hand, because the fingers in the photo were short and stubby, and Carrie's were long and slim. So Nancy's like, okay, not my daughter's hand.
Whose hand is this?
Right. So she sent it to the police, who contacted Dave, and Dave told them that he never proposed to Carrie. Like, he's like, "I'm not proposing to the woman who's been terrorizing me for months now." He also told police that he had gotten a scary email on the night of the 6th. It was a photo of a woman with dark hair tied up in the trunk of a car with duct tape over her mouth. And Dave said he couldn't exactly tell who it was in the photo, but the email that came along with the photo said that it was Liz. The subject was, "You should read." I'm going to read this email verbatim because there are some weird grammar issues. So I'm just going to read it as it's written. So in the email, Carrie said, "You will do exactly as I say, and then I will let her go. You will dump Liz and you will start seeing me again, that it no arguments about it. As soon as you agree, I will let her go somewhere. I might give her phone back. If you don't agree, she will stay in my trunk, and since no one knows my car, you won't find her. So TikTok, you will call her phone and tell her what you have to get rid of her. Leave a voicemail, I will be having her play it, so if I hear, if not, then that's it, she dies in my trunk. So don't F with me, I am sick of her getting what belongs to me. You can't play with my feelings, understand. Do it or say goodbye to her."
Okay, this is police stuff.
Right.
So we'll get involved now.
Right. So now it's kidnap. So anyway, that night Dave texted Liz and asked if she was tied up in the trunk of a car. And Liz told him that she was fine, but thank you for checking in on me. So it was fake.
Yeah. Beyond unhinged.
Right. 2 days later, Dave spotted Carrie's black Ford Explorer in his apartment complex parking lot. But it was covered in snow, which meant it hadn't been driven in a few days. He took a picture of the license plate and sent it to the police, so a forensic investigator did come and check the car for evidence, and it seemed like the car had been wiped clean. However, they did find one perfect fingerprint on the lid of an empty mint tin that was in the cup holder. Meanwhile, Dave and Liz were becoming exhausted by everything, so they allowed police to do a phone dump, which meant they would allow police to attach a small device to their phones to collect everything on them. But this would be a logical download, which meant it wouldn't include any deleted data. It was also around that time that Dave started to get tired of Liz again. She had started sending her long passive-aggressive emails once again, and he had had enough of that from Carrie. He didn't need that from Liz, too. But at the same time, he felt like Liz had put up with so much, and he felt guilty about the Carrie situation. So he agreed to spend one day a week with Liz, which was Wednesday. And that's exactly what I want, someone to spend one day a week with me out of guilt, you know? Like, no thank you. On April 1st, Liz called the police to report that her car had been vandalized and someone had keyed the phrase, "whore, stop seeing Dave," into her car. And on April 17th, Nancy got a call from someone claiming to be Dave Krupa. He said that Carrie had called him and told him she was living in a homeless shelter in Omaha and she wants her to come pick you up. Nancy immediately called the police and she and the detectives went to the shelter to see for themselves. But Nancy was heartbroken, but not surprised to find out that Carrie had not been staying there. Carrie's friend Amber also got a message from her saying that she had made a big mistake and went away for a while, but now she wanted to come home. But she never agreed to meet Amber anywhere. And when Nancy asked Dave about that call, because, you know, she got the call from someone claiming to be Dave Krupa, he said that it was not him who made it. So someone had impersonated him. Then, on May 3rd, Max decided to send his mom's Facebook account a message. He just sent, "Hi." And he got a response that said, "Hey, little man, how are you?" Carrie never called her son little man, so he didn't think that he was talking to his mom. So he sent back some questions. He asked, "What is my middle name? What was our first boxer's name? And who was my best friend as a little kid?" And after he sent that, he did not get a response. She did, however, make a long Facebook post saying, "I'm done answering questions to prove myself. I'm fine. I just wanted to leave." Something along those lines. So around this time, Dave started seeing some new women, but they would also get threatening messages. One woman even got a bunch of messages that threatened to slit her and her children's throats if she didn't stop seeing Dave, which was insane because she hadn't even met Dave in person yet. They had only exchanged a few messages on Plenty of Fish. So whoever is sending these messages has access to his Plenty of Fish account, potentially? Because how would they know who it was if she had only exchanged a few messages with Dave? Isn't that crazy?
Wow. Yeah. I mean, so he's hacked. He keeps changing his phone number.
His emails.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
It's like, I guess, why wouldn't he have, or why wouldn't Carrie have access to Dave's Plenty of Fish? But
yeah, this is crazy because she has to be on his Wi-Fi network or something.
Maybe.
Or like hacking in some other way. But it does seem like she has the technical skills to do that.
Right. Very true. Computer programmer. So at 8:15 a.m. on August 17th, 2013, Liz called 911 saying that someone had broken into her house and set it on fire. And this fire was massive. The whole house was charred. It was a bad fire. And when firefighters went inside, they found the bodies of Liz's four pets. She had two dogs, a snake, and a cat, and they were all dead from smoke inhalation, which is just terrible. When looking into how the fire began, they quickly determined that someone had intentionally started the fire in multiple rooms of the house. And Liz told the fire chief that a woman named Carrie had been stalking her. She told them it was a girl her boyfriend had been seeing for only about 2 weeks. And with the way she was harassing and stalking Liz, it was like she had been married to Dave. She cared that much about him. And she showed this fire chief an email from Carrie that said, "I hope you and your kids burn to death." Luckily, Liz's kids weren't home during the fire, so they were okay. But not long after that, Carrie sent an email to Liz admitting that she set the house on fire, so it was no secret who had done it.
Okay, well, this is a crime that's punishable.
Yeah, well, at this point, the police are actively looking for Carrie. Like, they have been actively looking for her because they not only want to question her for, like, the stalking and everything, but, like, she's done a couple of things now that are definitely she could be arrested for.
Yeah, this is like jail time.
Yeah.
Type of,
yeah,
this
arson.
Is like felony.
Yeah, this, yeah, is fully arson. And I mean,
so whatever warrant they need should be able to be gotten now.
Multiple animals, you know?
Yeah.
Like, that's insane.
Yeah, oh my God, those poor dogs.
I know. Really sad.
Our pets, you know.
Yeah, it's really terrible. Right before the fire, Dave had broken things off with Liz, but she still called him and let him know that Carrie had burnt her house down. So he felt guilty, and he left work to go and see her. And unsurprisingly, he got guilted back into a relationship with Liz. She knew he felt bad, and she'd constantly tell him that it was because of him that Carrie was in her life and was terrorizing her. Things were not going well for Dave. He had come into work to find Dave Beats Women spray-painted in fluorescent orange at his place of work, and things at this point had only escalated, and he became a nervous wreck. He never felt safe anymore, he had begun drinking heavily, and had almost lost his job a number of times, and he bought a gun. For another year, the harassment continued. The constant threatening messages, the vandalism, bricks through windows, and now Carrie set Liz's house on fire. It was a bad time. But 2014 and part of 2015 passed, still with no sign of Carrie, but still constant harassment. So 2.5 years later, in April of 2015, detectives Ryan Avis and Jim Doty decided to take a fresh look at Carrie's disappearance. They wanted to take another crack at it because this case was so unresolved and so strange, but they knew they had to tackle it in a new way. So Detective Avis reviewed the case files under the assumption that Carrie was alive, while Detective Doty would do the same thing but assume that Carrie was dead. It wasn't something the police had really considered before that point. So at no point during the 2.5 years did they ever consider that Carrie was dead and someone else was posing as Carrie.
That is a bit shocking.
Isn't it? It's a bit shocking. So
that was literally my first knee-jerk reaction.
Mine too. So after looking things over, Detective Avis realized that he literally could not prove with one bit that she was alive. She hadn't been seen since the morning that she was with Dave, and then after that she went missing, and then all hell broke loose, and she hadn't been seen since. Carrie, quote-unquote, had done so many things, but nobody had seen her in over 2 years. And at the same time, her mother and son and family are like, this is not Carrie. So he's like, okay, actually, I think maybe this is the way we should be taking this. And the more they got looking into it, they found one name that popped up a lot through the entire case. And you guessed it, Liz Golier. Everything kept pointing back to Liz. It seemed like there were way too many coincidences, which was when they decided to start investigating her. But to their surprise, only a few days later, Liz walked through the doors of the sheriff's office. On December 4th, 2015, Liz told police she wanted to file a harassment report on Amy Flora, Dave's ex. She told detectives Amy had been stalking her on Facebook, and she had probably stolen Dave's gun too. Dave had recently purchased another gun to protect himself, and a few days later, it had gone missing. And Liz claimed that it was Amy. She also claimed that it had been Amy who was harassing her the whole time. Detective Avis pretended like he knew nothing about the situation because he wanted Liz to tell him everything. They asked her if she knew what kind of gun it was, and immediately she said it was a 9mm Smith & Wesson.
Okay.
She told police. Right, exactly. He's like, say more. Say more words. And
don't say less.
Yeah.
Say more.
Keep incriminating yourself. So she told police she had a lot of harassing messages from Amy on her phone. So the police asked if they could download her phone contents. And since they had already done that one time before and nothing bad happened to her the last time, she agreed. But the difference between the first phone dump and the second one was they would be downloading everything on her phone, including what had already been deleted. So even though she's like, okay, I deleted this and this and this, they have that record. And she didn't know that. So whoopsie, you know, that was a big whoopsie on Liz's part. But the next day at 6:41 p.m., Liz called 911 from Big Lake Park screaming that somebody had shot her. She told the dispatcher that she was in the parking lot laying next to her red Toyota. She then told the dispatcher that she had been shot only once, but they had fired a couple of shots, and now she was laying next to her car with a gunshot wound to her leg. When officers arrived at the scene, they found her bleeding next to her car. She had been shot in her left thigh. Right. Would you explain to our audience what you're doing?
I just made a gun with my hand.
Your right hand.
And then I pointed it at my left leg.
Right. Like, if you were a right-handed person, which most of the population is, I believe, and you had to shoot yourself in the leg, you'd most likely shoot your left thigh. I don't know, maybe not. I mean, that would be a really crazy thing for someone to do, right?
But certainly be a bit extreme.
It would also be a crazy thing to set your own house on fire with your pets inside, wouldn't it? You know?
Say more. Tell me more. Okay. I mean, I need to know what is happening here.
Yeah.
This is like literally so crazy.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So when the officers arrived at the scene, they found her with a gunshot wound in her left thigh. And when officers asked her who had shot her, she said she didn't know. But then all of a sudden, she cried out that it was Amy. Amy Flora. She said she had been sitting on the bench, minding her own business, when Amy approached her from behind and said, "So you like fucking Dave?" and then shot her in the leg and ran off. Police searched the area because, you know, they didn't take that long to get to her, so in theory, she should have been in this park or a gun or any sign of a person. But they didn't find any evidence of a shooter, and so they took Liz to the hospital. Around 7 p.m., Amy was sitting on her couch when she heard banging at her door. It was the police, a bunch of them, with all their guns drawn and pointing at her. She learned that Liz had claimed that she shot her, but Amy said she had nothing to do with it and didn't know anything that they were talking about, and she even agreed to take a polygraph test. The only problem was, this whole ordeal was incredibly distressing to Amy, and that was clear because she failed the polygraph.
Yeah, I was going to say never take a polygraph.
Right, but it was fine because the police never actually believed it was her. They just kind of had to, like, do their due diligence. I'm sure the police...
What do you mean? This is like theater.
No, you're right. Point. I'm sure the police on the scene, like the detectives who had been working on this case forever, never once believed that it was Amy who shot Liz. But the police who were dispatched to Amy's house because Liz said, "Amy shot me," didn't really know. So they had to, you know, take her in and book her.
Did
and
she have
whatever.
An alibi?
She was at home. I don't know if she had other people there or not, but it didn't matter because she was pretty much immediately cleared. Like, she was fine, even though she failed the polygraph test.
So he went off vibes.
Pretty much, yeah. Meanwhile, Special Deputy Tony Cava was reviewing the contents of Liz's phone. And remember, now they have everything, including anything Liz deleted off of her phone. And on her phone, they found tens of thousands of messages that had been sent by Liz with fake email accounts, texting apps that give you fake phone numbers, and incriminating photos. So they knew without a shadow of a doubt that Liz had been impersonating Carrie and had done everything.
She killed her own pets?
She did.
Oh, that means Carrie's dead.
Yeah.
That poor woman.
It is looking that way. So there were even photos of Liz staging her own kidnapping. Photos of Carrie's car before the police even discovered it. 20 to 30 different email addresses using Carrie Farver's name in different variations. Facebook accounts. And fake numbers that were used to stalk and harass Dave and Amy and any other woman that entered into Dave's life. The sheer volume of data was unbelievable. This detective had to put in hundreds of hours of unpaid work time to sift through all of it and piece it all together. He even created a special machine to log and organize each piece of data. They also had a forensic tech specialist look at everything, and it was very easy for him to tell the exact time and place each photo was taken and the timeline of everything. But it was a lot of stuff to sift through, so it took a while.
Wasn't it like 300 messages a day?
Like something like that. Yeah, they concluded that the amount of time it would have taken to do all of this would have been 40 to 50 hours a week. So stalking Dave was literally Liz's full-time job.
That is so, I don't know, foreign's not the word, but it's just mind-boggling that somebody gets to this place where, I mean, she still had to make money. So she had a full-time job?
She had her own housekeeping business.
Right. And literally every other waking moment that you have,
she spent stalking Dave. Yeah.
Right.
And harassing.
I don't know. How does that even happen to a person?
I don't know. It's really perplexing. Mind-boggling. Yeah. I don't know. It's confusing. All three of those things meant the same thing.
But they're different. It's not crazy.
Thank you.
We're using new words.
New words. Okay. And that's when they pieced together that she had literally burnt down her own house and killed her pets, which is pure evil. And she shot herself. They were putting things together that they were like, how could any person do what she has done? It like didn't make sense. But at the same time, they had all of the evidence in front of them. So there was no disputing it.
Sometimes the phone don't lie.
Right. That's true. So 2 weeks after Liz was shot, police brought her in for questioning under the ruse that they were working on the missing persons case for Carrie Farver. So they asked her a few questions about her relationship to Carrie, and they told her that they had found Carrie's remains, which they had not, but they told her that they did. So she told them that she didn't know Carrie well enough to know who would have wanted her dead, but then flipped the script and blamed Amy Flora. And Detective Jim Doty knew he needed Liz to think that he believed Amy had done it. So he told her if she received any messages from Amy about what had happened to Carrie, to let them know, because it would be like gold to them, is what he said. So he's basically recruiting Liz to be like, hey, if Amy messages you, you let us know, because we are really on her case and we're really trying to get anything we can.
Mm-hmm.
And they were hoping Liz would write a message giving details about the murder and incriminate herself. And it only took a few days before Liz fell right into their trap. Liz gave them messages that she claimed were from Amy, where Amy confessed to shooting Liz at Big Lake Park. But Jim Doty called Liz and asked him to push Amy to give her information on the Carrie situation, specifically what she did to Carrie. Because he's like, we know she shot you in the leg. You saw her with your own two eyes, but we don't know what happened to Carrie. We just have her remains. So please see if you can get that from her. And on the phone, you can hear Liz say, so you guys want me to email her back? And Jim Doty literally says, I'm leaving that in your court, Liz. I mean, if that's something you'd feel okay doing, that would be really helpful for us.
Be
like,
gold.
That is literally a quote. Like, that's what he said.
Wow.
Yeah. So a few days later, Liz forwarded a new email, this time details about Carrie's murder from Amy. And it said, when I met Crazy Carrie, she would not stop talking about Dave and him being her husband. She tried to attack me, but I attacked her with a knife. I stabbed her 3 or 4 times in the chest and stomach area. I then took her out and burned her. I stuffed her body in a garbage can with crap. So the details were graphic, but their next tactic was to agitate Liz with this obsession she had with Dave. So the police told Dave about everything. At this point, Dave knows that Liz is behind all of it. And actually, the first time the police told him that Liz was behind it, he almost didn't believe them because it was so unbelievable. I mean, you heard the story. Right. Like, he's like, I've been spending the last 2.5 years of my life, 3 years, with this woman in an on and off relationship. And we've been like, I've seen the text come on her phone. Like, she was sitting next to me. She wasn't touching her phone. Like, he just didn't believe it.
Yeah. Until, I mean, that would have been very convincing.
Right. Until Liz said Amy shot her in the leg. And then he was like, oh fuck. Like, she stole my gun. She shot herself in the leg. And it was from that point on that Dave was like completely convinced. So the police went to Dave and they were like, we're going to try to agitate Liz and we want you to move in with Amy. And so he did. He and Amy.
Wow.
Yeah. He and Amy moved in together and that worked really well because she called the police a few days later sobbing about why Amy wasn't already arrested. She pressed them on why that graphic email about what Amy did to Carrie wasn't enough. She basically was like, she needs to be arrested and she shot me in the leg and she killed someone and she still gets to like win. Like, she still gets Dave.
Oh my God.
And again, Doty told her that they were just building a case and they needed more information that only the killer would know. So they're like, send her another email, see if she'll give you more information. And within the next few days, Liz kept sending them more Amy confessions. She wrote, I really did kill Carrie, and I did do it in her own car. So when they got that, they went back to Carrie's car, because they now had it in, like, evidence, and they searched it for a third time. But this time, they now knew it was a crime scene, and they knew what they were kind of looking for. So they took the fabric seat cover off of the passenger seat, and they found a blood stain that had been soaked into the chair. It had been cleaned off the cover, which was why they didn't find it in the first place, but underneath it, there was blood. So they had tangible evidence that a murder had taken place, and not just like digital proof. And the blood was a match for Carrie Farver. Mm. Yeah, it's really terrible. Like, this woman had only known Dave for 2 weeks, and she was just like lovely and smart and like a wonderful mother and daughter. And, you know, she just met the wrong person. And by met, I mean,
not even met the wrong person.
Just walked like, past her. Like she walked past her in a span of 2 weeks. That's what happened.
Yeah. Just such a bright light.
I know.
Taken too early.
Seriously. Omaha detective Dave Schneider had Liz arrested for an unpaid traffic citation that way he could bring her in for questioning. And unsurprisingly, when he finally confronted her about Carrie, she denied everything. She said she had never been in Carrie's car. She had never made fake emails. She didn't even have internet at her house. Meanwhile, detectives Avis and Doty had gotten a search warrant for Liz's house, and they found Carrie's digital camera and video camera, which meant at some point Liz went into Carrie's house and stole those and kept them for years. Like, this has been years. So they had more than enough evidence to arrest Liz. But the strongest evidence they found was actually after Liz's arrest, if you could believe that or not. The detectives went to Dave, and after talking to him for a while, right before they left, they asked him if he remembered anything else. Like, they've talked to Dave so many times, but they're like, just, you know, if you think of anything,
yeah, what else?
Let us know. So he told them, actually, yeah, I have this tablet that's been in storage for years, but it might have something on it. And so inside the tablet was a micro USB chip. And that chip had been in Liz's phone before it was in the tablet.
Wait, what?
I know. So weird. I don't know.
What the fuck?
I don't know what in what scenario. How did this not
come out earlier?
Because he just didn't think of it. This was a tablet that he had in storage for years. It's like, why would he know? But
it couldn't have been that many years because this is...
It was at least two.
Yeah, but like Liz was involved.
Right, but he didn't think of that tablet when he found out that Liz was behind everything because he had only recently discovered that and his head was reeling. I mean, think about everything that he would have to think about. He basically had been sleeping with his stalker for 2.5 years.
That's... true.
Like he had enough to unpack, you know,
for sure.
This random tablet.
I'm just confused why the USB made it to her phone, to his tablet.
Yeah, very confusing to me as well, but it was the case that the USB chip had been in her phone before it was in the tablet. Maybe so they could get like service on this tablet. Like you can get phone service on like a phone or like an Apple Watch if you put like a thing in it, you know?
I guess so.
So anyway, point being the chip was in her phone. And when they downloaded everything, they found a photo of Carrie's decomposing foot. They knew it was Carrie's because she had a Chinese symbol tattoo that meant mother on the top of her foot. And it was her tattoo, her foot, and it was decomposing. So the fact that she had taken this photo is like, what the hell? Like, I mean, obviously she's so beyond psychopathic. Like she is so crazy, but like she took a snapshot of her foot, like as a keepsake, like for what?
If it made sense, that's a problem.
That's true. That's true. You know what? You're right. So December 2016 was when the trial started to like come about. So Douglas County Prosecutor Brenda Beadle took on the case and she knew it was going to be a difficult one because it was just bizarre. She was going to have to do some real convincing to get the jury to believe that someone had willingly set their own house on fire, killed their pets, and shot themselves in the leg. It was just like way too weird and obscure for her to be like, okay, this is a slam dunk. Even though they had so much evidence, she had to piece it together for them. Meanwhile, Liz's defense attorney was a legend. James Martin Davis was a very famous defense attorney in their area, and he found flaws in the case, like they didn't have a body, they didn't have a crime scene or a murder weapon, or literally any proof that Carrie was dead. Sure, they found her blood, but they don't know if she's actually dead. And he literally said in an interview after everything, like this is, you know, years later, he said, I wanted to move the trial up before they found a body. So he's like, yeah, she did it. But like,
yeah, well, I mean, I don't know. The defense attorney
it's giving
game is
slime, you know?
Yeah. It can feel morally strenuous at times. And I think this is one of them.
Yeah. It is one of those times. So he requested to only have a judge trial and not a jury trial because that would speed things along. So he truly was like, before they find a body, we're going to get this case on the road.
Right.
So May of 2017 was when the trial began. And the prosecution did...
Wait, did they grant the judge trial or...
I think they went with a jury trial ultimately, I believe, because it took until May 2017.
Interesting. I don't know, like, in what case you get a judge trial.
I don't know.
I'm interested in what goes on there.
It may have been a judge trial. I'm not entirely sure. It's not super important, but either way, the prosecution did an amazing job laying everything out. There was so much evidence that even Liz's defense attorney said, holy hell, this woman is despicable. Like, not in the courtroom, but like, even he, usually when you see a defense attorney talking about a case, like years later, they still are like really defending it. They're like, yeah, no, this person didn't do it, and here's why, and whatever. But like, in his interviews, he was like, she's despicable, man. Like, this is bad. So as for Liz, she was unfazed through everything. And even the most graphic and damning testimony, like, she did not blink twice. Like, she did not care.
If she did, wouldn't you be more surprised?
I don't know. Yeah. You would think, as a human, you would have 1 ounce of feeling toward what you have done.
Yeah, but like, to do what she's done, you can't.
Yeah, I guess that's true. I don't think our brains are wired the same way, so I don't think I'll understand.
I was going to say so disconnected from reality, but like, honestly, very much tethered to it, just in a completely
unhinged way. Yeah. So after everything, the judge found Liz Golier guilty of first-degree murder, and she was sentenced to life in prison. Finally, Carrie's family got the closure they needed. They were relieved Liz was finally put away and couldn't hurt anyone else. But it was terrible because it was like she had murdered Carrie twice. She had actually killed her and then killed her reputation and memory for years before everything came to light. Carrie was only 37 when she died, and her mother wants people to remember her as the fun-loving, smart, caring woman that she was. She was an incredible mother who loved her son and was a very hard worker. And actually, so Anne Rule, who is a legendary true crime author who wrote The Stranger Beside Me about Ted Bundy, her daughter, Leslie Rule, wrote a book about this story called A Tangled Web. And I got some of the information from that book. But isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
Leslie Rule, like, true crime icon family, wrote a book about this. But like, it makes sense. I mean, it is a tangled web. There's a lot to talk about.
Yeah. Some of the things that she did is just like, I mean, who would ever think?
Right.
Except that I would like to point out.
You did know the entire time.
I'm getting a very selected piece of this, but I think almost immediately I was like, oh, like, Liz killed her and assumed her identity.
Right. The first time I was presented this case, I thought the exact same thing. And I was like, how did Dave not see it? Like, how did he not realize that, like, before he had even met Carrie, Liz was doing really weird things that, like, kind of carried through in this whole, like, stalking thing, like sending a million emails, like being passive aggressive and like just over the top with everything, even though they hadn't known each other for very long. And like, it gave Liz the whole time. I was like, okay, this is very.
Right. I think, like, when you're going through that, when you get those texts, your emotional brain kind of turns on. You're totally just reacting to that. And you don't think that you kind of step back and see the bigger picture. Whereas we're emotionally detached and you come in and then you're like, oh.
Right.
It's, I don't know. It's kind of like if you, what is it? To see the forest from the trees. What's the saying? But you could see, to see the bigger picture.
Sure, sure.
You know, instead of having it like right in front of your face.
No, totally. And I absolutely don't blame Dave for not realizing this sooner. Because like I said earlier, like, he did not know Carrie very well. Like, they had met each other and they hit it off. And he thought she was really great and smart and funny and amazing. And like, for the first 2 weeks that they knew each other, the only 2 weeks they knew each other, they had a really great chill time. So like, everything was pointing to she's a great person. He even gave her a key to his apartment after only knowing her for 2 weeks because her work was down the street and, you know, it just made sense. And he trusted her, even though he had only known her for 2 weeks, which is a bit much. But it goes to show that, like, she came off at the very least as a very amazing person. And like, from what her mother and like son and family members have said, she was an amazing person. So I don't think he was wrong for doing that. Sure, it's quick, but like, she clearly was giving good person. But
right.
Anyway, I don't blame him because you only knew that person for such a short amount of time. Like, of course there could be things you didn't know about them and like, they could be a crazy person. So for him, he was like, uh-oh, just, I read this one wrong.
Yeah.
My bad.
Yeah. My other point is when you go through something yourself, it's not as easy to tell. Like, how many times can you tell that a friend is going through something where you know, like, oh, this is just...
Right. You can see it so clearly, but they can't. And they just keep talking about it. And you're like, if you just saw it from my perspective,
right,
you would know this is crazy.
Right.
Yeah, so... totally. But so since 2017, Liz has been at Nebraska Correctional Center for Women, and she still claims that the real killer is out there. Of course, you know, no responsibility, no accountability, you know, whatever. She claims she's innocent.
I really want to know if she actually believes that.
There's no way she actually believes that. She wasn't unconscious when she burnt her house down. You know what I mean? Like,
I don't know. I'm befuddled.
Right, right. You know? You like lie so many times that you start to believe it's actually true. I'm sure some part of her was feeling that, but at the same time, like, I don't feel the need to humanize her at all. You know? Well, like, I don't feel the need to like find any sort of redeeming quality or like, well, maybe she like no. was a lunatic who did terrible things. Killed her pets, shot herself in the leg, like terrorized people for years, and also was incredibly cruel to Carrie's family because she continued to like talk to them and like
give them hope.
Gave them hope, but also like let them believe that she was just like alive out there somewhere and like didn't want to be with them, was incredibly mean to them. Like Max was so torn up about this, of course. Like he sent this Facebook page years into this crazy ordeal basically being like, Mom, I really want you to come to my graduation. He still, you know, it's like, it's stuff like that that just like rips your heart open, and it's like, this woman was heartless. So I do not feel any kind of empathy or understanding because she doesn't deserve it, you know?
No. Yeah, I guess my point is I'm just curious what actually goes through her head.
I don't think we'll ever know.
We'll never know, yeah. But it just...
Or could explain it, you know? Yeah,
no. I'll just be endlessly curious about it.
Sure. Yeah, I think that's fair. Dave has had a really lasting impact from the years of being stalked and harassed. He said he's paranoid as hell and doesn't trust anybody. But to him and to Nancy, detectives Doty and Avis and Kava are heroes. Max attended Iowa State University from 2016 to 2021 to pursue a Bachelor of Science in Software Engineering and Data Science. So he kind of followed his mother's footsteps. And he's now living in Minnesota and is working at a financial technical company, Chime.
Good for him.
I know. An article I read about where they are now said, the young man has also started building a family of his own after tying the knot with childhood sweetheart Sarah Weed in June of 2020. So they have a daughter named Kira that was born in May of 2023. And in the aftermath of Carrie's death, Nancy's kept a relatively low profile. So there's not really anything on her. But we do know that she, you know, raised Max and, you know, was a good mother to Carrie and probably to Max as well. So that's amazing. But Dave has also kind of kept a low profile. However, we do know that he has been seeing a woman named Margie, and according to her, they somewhat recently went on a trip to California, and she can see him like starting to become better and like heal from this situation. So it seems like he's moving on, and that's all I really know about them, but we wish them nothing but the best. I think we can say that safely.
Right. Yeah, I don't know how you even begin to address the trust issues that you must have.
Oh my God, you never trust that. Anyone ever again.
Well, I mean, I guess... You have to, but...
Right. At some point, at least for your own sake, you'd want to, like, move on and be able to trust people again and let people get close to you. But I can only imagine how difficult that would be to let those walls down, you know?
Yeah.
It would probably take 2 to 3 business years until you, right, like, started to trust anyone, so...
For real.
But that is the story of Dave Krupa and Carrie Farver and Liz Golier. Woof.
Yeah. Oh my God. I mean, poor Carrie, poor Dave.
I know. It's just so terrible that and she got mixed up in this.
Yeah. Carrie's family and Max and Nancy and, I mean, the whole thing is just so horrible.
Yeah.
But so bizarre at the same time.
Extremely bizarre.
I mean, I kind of knew what was going on the whole time, but I kind of had moments where I went back and forth, but it just... Has this ever happened again? Like, I don't know. This seems incredibly unique.
To this degree, I mean, probably not many, at the very least. Like, it's just so crazy because there absolutely was a pattern, and like looking back on it, you can kind of recognize that like anytime Dave would cut things off with Liz, things would escalate. Like when he broke up with her at one point, that was when she set her house on fire and then called him back and was like, she set my house on fire. Like, oh, come be my boyfriend again. And he was like, okay, I guess I will. He broke it off another time. She vandalized her car. He broke up with her another time. She staged her own kidnapping. Like, she was like, where do you get that? Like, how do you think that those are logical ways to get somebody back? And the motivation behind all of this was a man, like a man that she didn't know very well and like clearly wanted nothing to do with her in like any real way. Yeah. It's just the delusion. Obviously, there's a lot of delusion there and like mental illness, clearly, but like that delusion is strong.
Yeah. I'm thinking that delusion doesn't skip leg day. Okay. Tell you that.
That's true.
My humor's broken. I feel it's late. Truly broken.
It is late and it's been a long week. So that's, yeah. I'll let it go. But no, that's true. There was a lot of delusion there. But anyway.
Yeah, let's move on.
That is enough of that story for one sitting. Why don't you tell me something good so we can have a bit of a palate cleanser? What is your good thing?
This week, I will be hitting the golf simulator.
Oh my God.
And we're, guys, it is back again. Golf season is in.
It's upon us.
It is upon us. It will now become a regular part of my scheduled updates.
As if your good thing hasn't been golf, like most of the time anyway.
No. Oh, wait, was it in LA?
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, well, you are always. Listen, I love
can
you
I just have
a
moment? Is my update. Okay.
Give your update.
You can have a hobby, but you cannot talk about it. Okay.
That's not what I'm saying.
Shut up about it. No, that's my good thing. You can now shit on me.
No, I'm not shitting on you. I just think that you could be a bit more creative with your good things. That's all. That's my one critique.
Okay. Well, what's your good thing?
My good thing is that we had the first like true sunny day of spring here. We sat at a coffee shop, or you came and sat with me for a little bit, but I was there for like the whole day. And it was really lovely to like sit outside and just like soak up vitamin D the natural way, not taking my little supplements like I do in the wintertime. So
all natural.
It was quite lovely. I even got a bit of a sunburn, which honestly at this point I kind of welcome because your girl is pasty. But
yeah,
that's my good thing.
Yeah, you just really appreciate the 70 degree days.
Oh my God, I'm so ready for summer. I cannot wait. Anyway, thank you so much for listening. If you would like to check out that bonus episode, head over to Patreon at patreon.com/nottodaypodcast. Get your merch. And if you have it, send me a picture and tag yourself on Instagram and I'll repost you. Get it at nottodaypodcast.myshopify.com. If you would like to see the pictures we post of all the stories we talk about, check us out on Instagram at notoday_podcast. If you have a story that you'd like to send to us and possibly hear on an upcoming listener's episode, send it to notodaypodcast@gmail.com. We have a TikTok that is not today podcast and a Twitter that is not today podcast, but the T on the podcast is a 3 because that makes sense. And just keep breathing.
Yeah.
Yeah.